Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's do the Border Patrol Fast Break and start off with Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Kansas! Jesse, what's up? How you doing?
Good, Stephen. How about yourself?
Doing very well. I know you research all of these games very closely. And so before we get into Kansas and Villanova, just who's your pick for the Loyola-Michigan game?
Michigan. Just over the course of the season has been the better team and has obviously played well as of late. And, you know, Loyola, wow. I mean, against K-State, that was obviously a crazy performance. And I know their offense is getting a lot of praise for kind of how modern it is and what they do with driving angles and kick out, things like that. But, end of the day, Michigan's what, a 5 or 6 point favorite in this game, should be able to take care of business, gives the national title game. But again, crazy things could happen. That's why we watch, and that's why this particular NCAA tournament has been as crazy as it's been.
No, you're right. And what's not crazy is Villanova and Kansas in the Final Four, two number one seeds that have played like number one seeds all tournament long. Let's start with Villanova. This is a team that comes in with 34 victories. They have won, I think, going back into the regular season, 9 in a row now, and they won every game. They've won every game in the tournament by double digits, including a couple of wins over Big 12 teams, West Virginia and Texas Tech. What stands out to you most as far as Villanova and the problems they could cause Kansas on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the matchup for Kansas, and Bill Self addressed it earlier this week, if you look at KU-Duke, you could say, okay, look, KU has the advantage in three-point shooting. KU has the advantage in transition. You know, you could see a certain path where KU could beat Duke by playing kind of more to its strength, where you could see Duke, okay, Duke's going to throw it inside. They've got the talented players. They've got the, Bagley and the two inside guys, and they can offensive rebound. And so you kind of see a path for KU to win if they played more to their strengths, you know, rather than Duke playing to its strengths. For KU Villanova, it's two teams that play a similar style, only if we're being honest, you know, Villanova does it better. I mean, Villanova's a team that offensively, if we go back in the numbers, look at the advanced stats over the last two decades, is ranks the second best efficiency-wise out of any offense over that time period. Jay Wright is kind of amazing. You think back to 2016 when KU played Villanova in the Elite Eight, and Bill Self was still playing, you know, the two big lineup with Perry Ellis, and Villanova was kind of breaking the mold as a blue blood, and they were playing their four out, one in. One in offense with Ochefu inside around four shooters, and KU lost a close game there, very competitive. But it's funny, like in the last 2 years, KU's gone kind of toward Villanova. You know, KU's gone to that four out, one in look, and now KU's Ochefu, as you joke, as a bookie, and you look at Villanova, and they've kind of even progressed further in those 2 years. Like Jay Reddy's even kind of gone to a different level with his offense now with five shooters on the floor and the motion and the spacing that they have to create open shots. So I think for KU, I think the number one thing you look at is they don't have to play Villanova for 40 games, and that's probably a good thing because I think over a 40-game period, you know, Villanova would win more than they'd lose. KU's got to beat them over 40 minutes, and that's going to start with outside shooting because the Jayhawks, as we know, have those four shooters. They should be able to play loose because the pressure's not on them, and I've seen games this year. You know, if KU starts 7-10 from three or 8-12 from three, it's happened in games this season. They don't lose those games. I mean, it doesn't really matter how bad you play defensively. It doesn't matter some of the other things you do. So I think KU's got to hope that they can kind of out Villanova. And in a short sample, in a small sample, in a 40-minute sample, that's something that's definitely possible with the shooters that KU has.
If Kansas has an advantage in this game, what is it?
Well, again, I think for KU, it might be a little bit – we talk about the 2-1 seeds. I think the pressure's on Villanova, so they can kind of go into it like they did against the Duke game where Bill Self will tell them to let it fly, you're the underdog, nobody's fixing you, all those sorts of things. And as we know under Bill Self, his team has played very well in those situations. So I think it's one advantage. And then if we want to look at the five guy, you know, the five matchup, I mean, it's going to be tough for Udoka to guard Spellman on the perimeter, you know, a 45% three-point shooter. But it's going to be tough for Spellman to guard Udoka on the interior because he's a guy that can back you down, obviously, and leads the nation in field goal percentage. And Villanova doesn't have great depth on the inside to kind of match up with Udoka if Spellman's not in there. So if you want to look at that for KU, that's a potential advantage. But like I said, other than that, I think there's a reason that Nova's a pretty heavy favorite in this game. I mean, if you're looking one seed versus one seed, I can't imagine that in a Final Four that there's been much bigger point spread than 5 points. And And that's just based on what Villanova's been able to do efficiency-wise over the course of this entire season. So, again, for KU, the good news is that it's not a long period of time. I mean, they can go out there and they can make some shots. Villanova might be a little bit tight. You might see some nervousness on that side. And all of a sudden, you're up in a game and you're feeling confident. And sooner you know, rather than later, you win the game. So, but it's as far as strengths and weaknesses go, it's just a little bit different from that Duke game. Because, like I said, I mean, last week I could rattle off so many things that KU does better than Duke, because there are a lot of things that Duke does better than Kansas. These two teams kind of match up in a similar way, where offense is what they do best. Villanova is good defensively, but again, that's not what they hang their hat on. So these two teams are kind of going to match up in a way that they look a lot alike, look a lot like each other.
Yeah, so, I mean, like you said, Villanova this year, Ken Pom's got them as by far the best offensive team in the country from his adjusted offensive rankings. He's got Kansas as his fifth best offensive team. I'm guessing those numbers are from the entire season. If he were to rank KU offensively with Malik Newman playing now, assuming he had been playing like this all year long, where would that Kansas offense rank? In other words, I mean, this is a different offense now, isn't it, since the postseason started with Malik Newman playing like this?
Yeah, definitely, and he's been KU's best player, you know, since the postseason began, and Bill Self has basically said that. It's gone from Devontae Graham being the main guy and Malik Newman being the sidekick to Malik Newman being the main guy and Devontae Graham being the sidekick. But I think you're kind of answering your own question here, Nate, though, because it is a zero-sum game here. I mean, we can talk about how many guys played well for Kansas against Duke. You know, Fee made the big shot and guarded Bagley well. LeGerald Vick emerged and made some victories for Kansas. Malik Newman was unbelievable, scored all 13 points in overtime. And still, you know, KU needs a shot from Grayson Allen to rattle out at the end of regulation to get to overtime to win a game where it was a three-point underdog. So, you know, what's going on here? You know, why did Kansas not win that game by more? And, I mean, the brutal answer you kind of have to give is this has not been the same Devontae Graham that we've seen the entire season.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be a huge key for Kansas, is like what Devontae Graham is going to show up here on Saturday night. Because I agree with you. If KU gets the elevated Sri Mikhailuk with the better LeGerald Vick, with the amazing Malik Newman, with the Big 12 Player of the Year, Devontae Graham, wow. I mean, this could be a great game. This could be one that KU could win, absolutely. But the problem is the last three games, ever since that game, the opener against Penn, KU hasn't gotten the Big 12 Player of the Year, the first-team All-American, Devontae Graham. They've gotten the guy who has kind of shot poorly early in the game and then kind of deferred to others late in the game, which has worked out for them. They've won those games, and he's been an assist guy. That's been good, but you know, even last game defensively, I mean, how many times did Trayvon Duvall, who doesn't really have much of a jump shot, blow by him and get to the rim? I know they were helping out inside on Bagley a little bit, but even things like that, I mean, it's tough to know exactly what it is and what's going on, and you have to assume that fatigue is rolling. He played 40 straight minutes, or 40 minutes in 10 straight games in the Big 12 season. I don't think Bill Self at that moment was thinking, oh, he might be tired when I get to the Final Four. He was probably thinking, holy crap, if I can just get this team to win a 14 straight conference title, that'd be huge for this season. So, you know, KU might be kind of paying for the bill that's due right now with that. But again, Sunday to Saturday, it's a lot of time to rest. It's a lot of time to be off your feet. So if KU can get Devontae Graham back with all those things you just talked about, Nate, there definitely could be a formula for KU to have a great offensive game and be in it right there at the end with Villanova when this game is ending tomorrow night here in about 36 hours.
So is that what you think it is? Do you think it's just fatigue and all the minutes he's played this season, or do you think it's something else?
Well, I mean, I think that's my best guess. It's really tough because, you know, some of those video games, I remember like some of the old soccer games you could play, they had like an energy meter above your head, and you could tell when your guys were getting tired. Like, it would be nice if we could have like a little energy meter above these guys' heads to know where they're at in the season. I would have to assume that. And again, it's not even something you really blame Bill Self for, because I don't think a month ago you would have assumed that this team was going to be in the Final Four, or that many people were assuming that when they were a game back in the Big 12 standings. But at some point, maybe that mileage is catching up to him. But having said all that, he has been a guy, Devontae Graham has been unselfish. And with Malik Newman's ascent, there have been times where he has deferred, and that's been the best thing for KU, because Malik has been on such a roll, and that has been okay for KU. For KU and for Devontae, I think the main thing is that they're still in the game. I mean, if you think back to like certain games in the past. When has KU lost in the NCAA tournament? When have they had a disappointing loss? They've had guys that have been relied upon the whole season that have shot well, that have basically started to shoot them out of games. You know, you remember the VCU game where, you know, all their three-point shooters couldn't shoot, and the game against Northern Iowa where Sean Collins just didn't have it that day, and they kept shooting in the second half and just couldn't make one. Devontae Graham, to his credit, you know, he's figured out in these games when he hasn't had it, and he's passed it off. He's passed off to Steve Mikhailuk for the game tying three against Duke. You know, there was a game early in the tournament against Seton Hall where he told Malik Newman to run the play that he's run all season, and Malik got in the lane, passed it out, and Seaman hit another three. So, again, this is an unselfish player doing unselfish things, but the great news for Kansas is that when he's done that, his teammates have stepped up. His teammates have taken on some of that load that he was taking on the entire season. And so, you know, while he was carrying KU, the other guys were kind of lagging behind, and now when his other teammates have really stepped forward, Devontae Graham's kind of been happy to lag behind a little bit. But, again, you hate to say that the Big 12 Player of the Year is the X factor for Kansas, but honestly, he's the X factor for Kansas because there's been a different level of play from him since the NCAA tournament started. If KU gets back to what they've seen from him previously, then you feel a lot better about their chances.
Jesse, thank you very much for the time, man.
All right, appreciate it, guys.
It's Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Now let's say hello to Stan Weber. Kansas State. Stan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy Good Friday and Easter weekend to you and everyone.
Very same right back at you, to you and your family. Stan, let's get into what you saw in the Elite Eight. Number one, not only just kind of to wrap up the K-State season, but also maybe give us a more in-depth opinion and view of Loyola Chicago, because you saw them playing at their very best, and that's what they're going to need to do again on Saturday if they want to beat Michigan. So your thoughts calling that game between Loyola and Kansas State.
Well, Loyola is a very good basketball team, and I think everyone's now understanding that and starting to look closer to what they do. The efficiency on offense, very high. You don't see very many teams shoot greater than 50% for the season, and K-State's defense is really strong, and they still shot 57% against K-State, second best percentage shot against K-State all year. So they were hot, and even at 50%, they would be tough to beat, but making those extra shots really made it worthy of pulling away, which they did, and they did it behind Ben Richardson, you know, obviously from Blue Light Northwest. I've seen him and Clayton Custer play a lot of basketball in high school, and they were dominant players, and on the big stage, Ben Richardson went crazy. You know, his 6 of 7 three-point shots. So for K-State's perspective, that really was a big difference maker, because you probably would expect him to score somewhere near 10 points. Instead, he lit it up, and that was too much for K-State. But from the perspective of Loyola, the thing that they do well also is they're good on defense and one of the best in the country. Now, their schedule isn't the same as a Power 5 conference team, but they have some impressive wins, and when they had to play well, they've been able to do it. When they went to Florida, they were able to win the game on the road. I think their win over Tennessee in the NCAA tournament is something everyone should take notice of, because they could easily be a Final Four team, yet Loyola found a way to win that ball game. And defensively, they hold teams to 62 points a game. What's crazy is in three of their four tournament games, including K-State, the opponent landed exactly at 62 points. The most they've given up is 68 points. The other three games, 62. They're very good on defense. And from a perspective of K-State, they played a perfect strategy. The way they handled ball screens really put K-State in a bind. They didn't have an answer. They needed Dean Wade out there. It could have been a little different if Dean Wade was there. Loyola would have had to adjust on defense and not play things the way they did. So it ended up being a good matchup. They play awesome offense. And to see them led by Clayton Custer, the Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year, and a big force on offense doing whatever he needs to do, not forcing things, not shooting the ball overly, just taking the shots when he gets an opportunity, distributing it, having the ball in his hand. And then the best defensive player in the Missouri Valley Conference, Ben Richardson, also from Blue Light Northwest. It's a great local story, and I was very fortunate on the plane flight out, Ed Fritz, the head coach at Blue Light Northwest, and I know each other well. We started seeing each other at KCI. Then he introduced me to Ben Richardson's parents. We probably had a half hour talking about things. It was great. That was on the trip out. And after the ball game, who do I run into but those three again? So I was very happy to be able to congratulate them. Are you kidding? Ben Richardson is the most outstanding player in the South region. To see his family right afterwards is really cool. But from K-State's perspective, what an amazing run. What a historic win. Didn't have Dean Wade. And if you listen to Nate Bucchetti, you know how important Dean Wade is. And yet they beat Kentucky. They beat Kentucky in the Sweet 16. And you got to understand Coach Calipari's record. He's been there 9 years. In his first 8 years, six times they're in the Sweet 16, they went undefeated. 4 of his 8 years, they made it to the Final Four. And yet K-State beat him. And they led for over 32 minutes. The biggest lead Kentucky ever had was 1 point. They had led for only a minute and a half of playing time. And K-State didn't have Dean Wade and controlled Kentucky like that. That's kind of the feature statement about this team this season. Pretty amazing, pretty historic win.
It's I'll always wonder what could have happened. You know, would K-State be in the Final Four if not for that injury to Dean Wade? Unfortunately, we'll never know the answer to that. What do we think? Are we feeling good about the fact that all these guys are going to be back at K-State next year?
No doubt. There's obviously the lead three. When you got Dean Wade, Barry Brown, Kamau Stokes, they've been starters now for 3 straight years. Anybody would feel good about those guys coming back. They're veterans in their fourth year, all of those kind of things. But I think what makes K-State fans feel good if they sit back and evaluate is two of the starters are a year younger. When you got Xavier Sneed and McCall Mayween, Xavier's getting better and better. McCall showed some things in the tournament that he can get done. I think he'll improve greatly in the second year at K-State. Then you go down and you look at the freshmen, and then you see Cartier Jada and McGurl and Levi Stockert. And suddenly you don't have to say that those guys are all superstars, but they're good enough to play at a high level, a level in the NCAA tournament, in the Big 12 tournament, in Big 12 play. They can compete with people, and they're young, and you've got depth spread out. So I don't know how you can't be excited about what Bruce Weber's done. You may look at the recruiting list and not know the names, but as the development continues and you look at what those guys can do on the court, it's not just three players who've cycled through and kind of been Bruce Weber's guys here lately. It's really a team with depth. Guys who are going to be seniors, juniors, and sophomores who are ready to compete, and they're all going to be back, and now they've had a good taste of NCAA tournament action twice. Last year was weird because when we went to Dayton and played in the first four, it seemed like you've accomplished something, and then you made the next trip to the next city. Even though that was just a first four game, it felt like they were deep into the tournament because they had to travel quickly to Sacramento and get ready to play a very good Cincinnati team. So I can tell you, being around the team, being with them, it felt like they've gone fairly deep in 2 straight tournaments. And that experience, I think, will be very helpful when they go into next season.
Stan, thank you very much for the time. Any prediction on the Final Four? Do you feel strongly about who emerges as the champion?
Well, I don't think you can feel strongly because Villanova is so good. I think Kansas will win the national championship, but I think we all need to do a little reevaluation, not only from K-State's perspective, but all across the board. It's been very easy because I think we're humble people here in the Midwest, and we often say, without question, oh, the Big 12, don't tell me about their RPI. Don't tell me about how good a conference they are. Don't tell me how they've done things in a non-conference. We know the Big 12 is not that good. That's been the theorem. It's been accepted by every pundit. I listen to you guys all the time, and everybody says it, and no one contradicts it. Well, guess what? When we got to the Sweet 16, the Big 12 had 4 teams tying only the ACC. When we got to the Elite Eight, the Big 12 had the most teams. They had 3 in the Elite Eight. And now in the Final Four, only 2 power conferences are represented, Michigan and Kansas. So I think we can give a little more credit to this season, which gives a lot more credit to K-State, because the top 4 teams won multiple NCAA tournament games. TCU, who is an RPI 20, didn't win. None of the other teams won a game in the NCAA tournament. I think the 4 top teams in the Big 12 can be separated. K-State's a part of them. And 3 teams in the Elite Eight, 4 in the Sweet 16, they were very good. I think West Virginia and Texas Tech are good basketball teams. K-State's shown how good they are. And Kansas separated from them pretty easily. Kansas is a lot better than the others. I say Kansas is the best in the country.
Stan, thank you very much for the time.
Okay, take care.
That is Stan Weber. Now we'll move on to Gabe DeArmond.
Missouri.
Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com. Hello, Gabe.
What's going on, guys?
Just college basketball and still basking in opening day. What a wonderful performance that was by the Royals pitching staff. But I digress. Let's Let's quickly get an update on the Porters. Right now, there are three Porters involved in the men's basketball team. I guess now two, because Michael Porter Jr. declared and he's going to be gone. How many Porters will be involved with the men's basketball team next year?
I think the percentage, the leader would be none, if you ask me today. I mean, Jonte at some point is going to, I think, declare and not sign with an agent, go through the process, see what happens. If he's fairly comfortable, he's a first-round pick, I would expect him to go. If both of the kids are gone, I would expect at some point, and this is more of a guess than anything based on information, but I would not be surprised by, you know, an announcement at some point that Michael Porter Sr. has resigned to pursue other opportunities in basketball, which would probably be more related to, you know, kind of his kids and helping them transition to the NBA.
So just being a first-round pick would be the criteria, you think, for Jonte not trying to become a lottery pick? Because it would seem like if he was maybe projected to be a late-round pick, if he came back for a year, he could push himself up into a higher draft spot.
Yeah, what I've heard for a while is if he's in the first round, which is a guaranteed roster spot, he is very likely to go. I think the feeling around the program is that they don't expect him to come back, but it with Michael, it was really a no-brainer decision as far as basketball. Mm-hmm. The only reason to come back was just purely emotional. With Jonte, I mean, there are basketball reasons to return. Like you said, if you're the 26th pick, like that's good. That's great. You know, you're going to be in the NBA. But if he comes back next year, like I think he's a legitimate SEC Player of the Year type candidate. And if he does that and has a really good year, develops his inside game, he could be a lottery pick. Now, you know, I guess that would kind of depend on each individual and what they think the difference is between those 2 years, how much Jonte, you know, maybe just doesn't want to go to school, maybe wants to be in the same draft class as his brother. Who knows? There's plenty of things that go into it. But from what I've heard, if he's confident he's in the first round, he's probably going to go.
So anywhere in the first round.
That's what I've heard.
What if it's like, maybe you're in the first round, maybe you're not.
Yeah, then I don't know. Then that's a decision he's got to make. You know, and this is kind of a situation where it depends on who you talk to. You hear different things. I've had people tell me, look, he does not want to be like a two-way guy that might spend some time in the G League next year and might kind of go back and forth. And then I've heard some people that just say, look, he's pretty much gone. He wants to go to the NBA. So I don't know which of those people really to believe at this point. This is a family that, like, look, they've hung out with Steph Curry. They know NBA people. I would think they're going to have a pretty good feeling where he'll go. But the other thing is, I mean, teams lie a lot. Like, somebody can tell him, hey, if you're there when we pick at 24 or whatever, we're absolutely taking you. That doesn't mean they will, you know. So I don't know. It depends completely on the feedback he gets and then how he weighs that. Like I said, if I had to put percentages on it, I think percentages are higher he's leaving than coming back.
Will you leave for the NBA next year?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Is there like a real high demand for 41-year-old 5'8 guys who are neither fast nor can shoot very well?
No, maybe.
Okay, then probably I won't.
I don't know. Yeah. All right.
I mean, I would if I was a first round pick, I would go.
Gabe, go Royals.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. I quit watching yesterday, but I looked at the box score and like, I never heard of any of those guys.
Right.
Hang on a second. Pitching change happening right now. Pitching change.
But you know what?
I expected like Jake Gutierrez to come out of the bullpen.
Well, he would have done better than what we saw yesterday. I could tell you that.
I think Jake's holding out for the.
I have hair for the bullpen.
You do have the long hair, and he had the Pounders jersey on yesterday.
I did.
I will say this though, to rub salt in the wound. Of course, watching the Royals bullpen implode while Greg Holland was signing a deal with the St. Louis Cardinals. So, there you go.
It's all going well, guys.
It's all coming together.
Maybe there's still hope that they can like really be bad enough to tank like they should have done.
Yeah, there you are. There it is. See,
I've been on that train for quite some time.
Gabe's on my side.
Thank you.
Team Tank.
Thank you, Gabe.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
I'm feeling he's on Team Tank 7.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
That's actually the name of our team.
I know. I just thought about that.
Yeah. It's the name of our soccer team.
And game Saturday.
We'll take a break. We'll talk to Mike McFarlane about that after this on WHB.